Chapter 5. The Culture Industry. Total Social Delusion. When writing about the culture industry in DE, Adorno and Horkheimer originally referred to mass culture, but they decided to replace the term because it could too easily sound like culture that spontaneously emerged from the masses, the contemporary form of folk art. Instead, they contend that the culture industry produces culture as a commodity, like any other, in line with the view of modern industry as standardized production, which they associated with Kant's schematism. Adorno's view of the culture industry is, however, not unproblematic, and this is suggested, for example, by a statement like the following: "The total context of the culture industry, which leaves nothing out, is one with total social delusion." But how, if social delusion is total, can anyone know that it is delusion at all? Logically, there is no way out of this situation, so one has to assume Adorno is exaggerating. In What is Coming to Terms with the Past, referring to the persistence in the Federal Republic of the kind of socio-political and economic factors that led to Nazism, he says, "I have exaggerated the gloomy side of things, following the maxim that today only exaggeration can be the medium of truth." He seeks to justify such a stance in an essay on Opinion Delusion Society, citing the case of a pedestrian wondering whether to cross the road when the lights have changed to yellow, on the assumption that the person cannot rely on the next car not being driven by someone reckless, even if it turns out that they are actually a considerate driver. The rational thing to do is not to take the real risk of being killed. In doing so, the person exaggerates by making the worst-case scenario the basis of not crossing. All thinking is exaggeration, insofar as every thought that really is a thought overshoots its fulfillment by given facts. The potential for truth, as well as the potential for delusion, nests in this difference between thought and fulfillment. Despite this defense of exaggeration, the way in which Adorno presents his analysis of the culture industry does weaken what he has to say. At the same time, some of the evidently problematic things he says about specific aspects of modern culture, like jazz, eventually come to apply to other aspects of the music industry, such as the worst kinds of industry-produced pop music. If Adorno's exaggerations are read just as warnings of where things can go if we fail to look beyond the immediate facts, his account of the culture industry does offer resources, not least for understanding the widespread contemporary success of reactionary political forces in the USA, the UK, and elsewhere. Adorno proposes an essential connection between the culture industry and the functioning of capitalist societies. Amusement is the extension of work in late capitalism. It is sought by those who wish to escape the mechanized process of labor in order to be able to cope with it anew. It has been argued that one reason the US working class rarely became widely radicalized after the First World War, despite their frequently dire situation, was because the American dream was kept alive by the dream factory of Hollywood, which distracted working people from the reality of their situation. Writing in the 1940s, Adorno does not fully subscribe to this view, as he thinks the development of new forms of communication means people will be less likely to be taken in by consoling ideological products like Hollywood movies. In DE, he claims, "The atrophy of imagination and spontaneity of the consumer of culture today does not need first to be reduced to psychological mechanisms. The products themselves, above all the most characteristic, the talkie, paralyze those capacities by their objective constitution." This latter remark introduces a further debatable element of Adorno's thinking about culture. He looks at cultural products in terms of the interpretation and critical analysis of the product itself, which he terms content analysis, rather than primarily in terms of the actual reception and effects of the products on their recipients. The danger here is that the focus on the analyzable aspects of a cultural artifact may tell us little about its effect on people in real situations. This danger results from the idea of total delusion. If that is presupposed, focus on reception loses much of its point. Attention will be directed instead to what does the deluding. Whether it in fact deludes cannot, however, be established in this way. Adorno seems at times, then, to see the dialectic between production and reception in culture in too one-sided a fashion. However, as we shall discuss later, when he does detailed empirical research on production and reception of cultural phenomena, some of the results are more plausible. The exclusion of the new. So what are the characteristics of the industry that create conformism? The following is exaggerated, but the history of Hollywood and of other aspects of popular culture does confirm at least some of the diagnosis. What is new in the mass cultural phase, as compared to the late liberal phase, is the exclusion of the new. The machine revolves in the same place. While it already determines consumption, it excludes what is untested as a risk. The film people look suspiciously at every manuscript that is not already reassuringly based on a bestseller. That is why the talk is always of idea, novelty and surprise, of that which is at the same time all too familiar and unprecedented. Why does Adorno attach so much weight to the absence of the new? His core assumption is that the state of Western society of that time, which then improved after the war, but has arguably again slipped back, is fundamentally unjust and repressive. In an unjust society, culture that is worthy of the name would enable questioning of that society, which means that people will be confronted with perhaps disturbing new ideas and ways of responding to the world. In contrast, the use of modern technology in the culture industry is in the name of the economic status quo. The thought of exhausting given technical possibilities, the full utilization of capacities for aesthetic mass consumption, belongs to the economic system, which refuses to use the capacities where it is about the abolition of hunger. Aesthetic mass consumption, then, encourages conformism that sustains oppression by obscuring the fact that oppression could be overcome. In a later account of his reflections on the culture industry, Adorno claims, "The overall effect of the culture industry is that of an anti-enlightenment. In it, enlightenment, the progressive technical mastery of nature, becomes mass deception, a means of fettering consciousness. It prevents the formation of autonomous, independent, consciously judging and deciding individuals. They, however, would be the prerequisite for a democratic society, which can only be maintained and developed in mature individuals." This, once again, involves the primacy of the objective. Systemic factors prevent the development of individual resistance to life that is wrong. When discussing the complexity of serious modern music, Adorno argues that the contemporary inability of the masses to understand anything complicated, which is inherited from their being excluded from education, Bildung, which in German has a wider sense of initiation into all aspects of culture, is intensified today by the culture industry, which shapes them, and by their own mechanization in the labor process. In their so-called free time, they are hardly able to grasp anything which does not resemble this labor process. When applied to some of what both in Adorno's time and now, is produced in popular films and TV. Such a judgment has some justification, and the nature of politics is clearly affected by this. However, Adorno also says much the same about most forms of music. Apart from the music he regards as articulating the truth of the historical situation, the case of jazz will highlight his underestimation of the difficulty of this kind of analysis. Consider then the essential premises of Adorno's analysis. He regards the culture industry as functioning in a different way from previous forms of ideology. Following Marx, ideology is socially conditioned false consciousness, and the new situation is that ideology, unlike in earlier forms of capitalism, by no means blindly, anonymously crystallizes itself from the social process, but is scientifically tailored to society. This is done with the products of the culture industry, film, magazines, illustrated newspapers, radio, best-selling literature of the most varied types, among which novel biographies play their special role, and now in America, especially television. The ideology of 19th-century capitalism arose from the pressures of industrialization. In a world which was largely dominated by economic laws, which enforced themselves above the heads of people. The rapidity and brutality of this process is well analysed in Karl Polanyi's The Great Transformation, first published in 1944, the same year as DE. Polanyi states, in terms which echo Adorno's view of the exchange principle, all transactions are turned into money transactions, and these, in turn, require that a medium of exchange be introduced into every articulation of industrial life. All incomes must derive from the sale of something or other, and whatever the actual source of a person's income, it must be regarded as resulting from sale. In the later form of capitalism, the culture industry researches how to produce the culture that will be effective in keeping people reconciled to a society governed by the exchange principle. The consumers of this culture are seen as having to conform to a labor process which hinders their self-realization by leaving little space or time for it. The ideology of the culture industry is intensifying duplication and justification of the situation that exists anyway, leaving no opportunity for developing non-commodified forms of social and economic life. The rapid move away from traditional religious authority that accompanies the growth of capitalism means that autonomy has little chance to develop. The authority of the Bible is replaced by the authority of the sports field, television, and true stories, which are based on the claim of the literal, of reality on this side of the productive imagination. This sort of analysis is clearly very compressed and does not cover everything that is at issue. Adorno does address a key further ideological product of modern capitalism, namely nationalism, although he thinks its role in late capitalism, that is, capitalism dominated by technologically advanced transnational corporations, is in certain respects diminished. Given recent history, this assessment may need some revision, as is shown by the encouragement of nationalism by those who seek to shore up the collapsing economic model of neoliberalism. Jazz. Adorno's interpretation of all forms of US popular culture of the time as means of cementing conformism raises some fundamental questions. This is where the example of jazz is significant, because it does not fit well into Adorno's approach. There is a paradigmatic mismatch between his overall theoretical frame and the empirical evidence concerning a supposed manifestation of the culture industry. It is, therefore, worth considering the issue in a bit of detail. Adorno's essay On Jazz, the first piece he wrote on the topic, is from 1936, before he went to the USA, so it was based on recordings, sheet music, and whatever he may have heard in Europe that was called jazz. The lack of detail to back up his case could be seen as a result of his contingent circumstances at the time. However, he refers to the jazz essay even in his work in the 1960s, though by that time his view was sometimes more differentiated. Core ideas of the essay are also carried over into the analyses of the culture industry in DE and elsewhere. Adorno's later use of his 1936 analysis is already put in question by the fact that, even by 1944, jazz had radically changed from the jazz referred to in the essay. The bebop revolution of the 1940s was a reaction against commercially promoted swing music, which was, in effect, the pop music of the time, and is, in some of its manifestations, the justified target of Adorno's criticisms. The progenitors of bebop were mainly black musicians, and the increased technical demands of the music were not least intended as a means of excluding musicians who just followed the commercialized vein of swing. The pursuit of a new jazz vocabulary in bebop also involved an element of political protest against a dominant white culture. Bebop's extension of harmonic, melodic, and rhythmic vocabulary lays the foundations of jazz's continual revision and questioning of received musical assumptions and practices that continues to this day. Even before bebop, jazz had, through figures like Louis Armstrong, begun to help establish a specifically black urban culture that generated resistance to white domination. In the jazz essay, Adorno insists, though, that this much is certain, that the serviceability of jazz does not negate alienation, but amplifies it. Jazz is a commodity in the strict sense. It is subject to the laws and the contingency of the market. Insofar as everything is affected by those laws and that contingency, this is, of course, necessarily the case. However, the fact that from the early 1940s, probably the most important development in jazz history was a reaction against what was dominating the market, and many of Charlie Parker's, eventually most influential recordings, were made on obscure, commercially unsuccessful labels, suggests Adorno neglects the dialectic involved in the commodification of jazz. It is precisely when jazz became more assimilated into the mass market that it produced some of its most important music as a reaction against that assimilation. In this sense, jazz does precisely what Adorno, as we shall hear, demands of new music. Jazz has been involved from its beginnings in a negotiation and confrontation with musical and social conformity. One just needs to read some of the negative reactions to jazz from the white culture of the time, and since, to see this. Adorno, though, sees the unconventional elements of jazz not as expressing protest, but as identification with the oppressor. They characterize a subjectivity which protests against a collective power which it itself is. For this reason, its protest appears ridiculous, and is beaten down by the drum, like syncopation is by the beat. His assessment of jazz rhythm changes somewhat later in his career. In 1962, he says, for example, that jazz taught technical skill, quick-wittedness, the concentration which had otherwise been degraded by light music, also tonal and rhythmic capacity for differentiation. Elsewhere, discussing how to sustain rhythmic differentiation in music performance, he remarks, "A light falls from here on a real function of jazz, namely to sustain such differentiations, which otherwise are disappearing." As, by the way, interpretation has a lot to learn from jazz. What many see as a key aspect of jazz, though, he dismisses, both in 1936 and often thereafter. The much-cited improvisations, those hot passages and breaks have merely ornamental significance, never constructive and form-establishing significance. However, even around 1936, extended improvisation had begun to develop in ways which come to full form-establishing fruition in jazz from the 1940s and 1950s onwards. Adorno also fails to see that jazz improvisation lives from communication with a live audience, who can effectively become part of the band rather than being passive consumers of a product. When talking about how to develop adequate theories concerning an area of research, Adorno often advocates unrestricted experience, remaining open to what might be distorted by the frame in which the research is carried out. In writing about jazz, he largely fails to follow his own avowed intentions. In the context of his assessment of the culture industry, and this is the key wider point that affects other aspects of his work, his view of jazz seems to derive from what could be termed a Gnostic attitude, which creates a radical separation between what is free of delusion and what isn't. In these terms, anything involved with the exchange principle and the market necessarily contributes to the context of delusion rather than making more sense of the world. This attitude results from the way he sometimes prioritizes objective structural factors in society over detailed empirical investigation of the ways people may resist delusion. Adorno's failure with respect to jazz also results from a neglect of how musical practices cannot just be understood by content analysis of musical works. In much of his writing on the arts, Adorno seeks to avoid the consigning of all judgments on aesthetic and cultural matters to the realm of the merely subjective. He does this in the name of social theory by dint of the explication of aesthetic right and wrong in the heart of the musical objects. This involves comprehending and analyzing subjective responses towards music in relation to the thing itself, zur Sache selbst, and its determinable content, rather than ignoring the quality of the object, treating it as a mere stimulus of projections, and limiting oneself to the identification, measuring, and ordering of subjective reactions, or of sedimented responses to music. This approach, which rightly questions the reduction of aesthetic appreciation to psychologically establishable facts that pay no heed to the aesthetic constitution of the work responded to, its content, is of undoubted value. The problems with the approach derive from its focusing too exclusively on musical analysis of objective factors, and from the assumption that the subjects involved have been wholly assimilated into the context of delusion. Adorno relies on an objectifying, observational perspective, which he argues for as follows. Art cannot absolve itself of the discipline of science from which it borrows, with whatever right it does so, its ideal of objectivity. What is missing is a reflection on how to understand the dimensions of art which involve participation in a practice, which relates to what happens, for example, in participation in a ritual, without which the art in question makes no sense. Jazz is a form of expressive sociality, where the music develops through the practice of dialogue within the band between musicians and with the audience. Adorno, as we discussed, appreciates the problem of how to characterize the relationship between subjective and objective when he talks about issues in philosophy. He seems, though, blind to the interactions between subjective and objective involved in the history of jazz. Jazz is demonstrably critical of the racist and exploitative society in which it emerged, in ways that become inexplicable in the terms of Adorno's analysis of the culture industry. Innovators in jazz, like John Coltrane or Ornette Coleman, often faced intense resistance even within the jazz community before what they did came to be appreciated. In this respect, they do not differ from composers such as Berg, Schoenberg, and Webern, whom Adorno sees as the paradigm of how modern art should function. Like all art, jazz produces conventions that can become rigidified, but opposing convention is precisely the motor that has kept jazz, which Adorno in 1936 declared beyond salvation, alive today. The difficulties in Adorno's account of how modern culture comes to be dominated by forces of conformity point to a series of issues in relation to philosophical understanding of modern societies. There is here a tension between investigation of the way objective structural factors determine the actions of social subjects and the need to show how resistance to those factors is empirically manifested in what subjects do in concrete social situations. This tension cannot be definitively resolved, as Adorno's own dialectical reflections on subjective and objective suggest, and has to be taken into account in any specific investigation of cultural phenomena. Despite the criticisms I have detailed, Adorno himself, like other members of the Frankfurt School, cannot be accused of failing to do empirical research. From the investigations of The Authoritarian Personality to research on astrology and newspapers in Los Angeles, to studies of the functioning of local government in Bielefeld and other projects, he often engaged in study of the detail of social phenomena. We touched on the decisive issue in this context when considering exaggeration. How is one to go beyond empirical data to understand the context which informs those data? In short, what role do data and theory play for Adorno in understanding society?